Normally, I like to snark about the various sponsors that sponsor these episodes, but I'm faced with a bit of a challenge because this episode is sponsored in part by A-Cloud Guru. They're the company that's sort of famous for teaching the world to cloud, and it's very, very hard to come up with anything meaningfully insulting about them. So I'm not really going to try. They've recently improved their platform significantly, and it brings both the benefits of A-Cloud Guru that we all know and love, as well as the recently acquired Linux Academy together. That means that there's now an effective, hands-on, and comprehensive skills development platform for AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, and beyond. Yes, and beyond is doing a lot of heavy lifting right there in that sentence. They have a bunch of new courses and labs that are available. For my purposes, they have a terrific learn-by-doing experience that you absolutely want to take a look at. And they also have business offerings as well under ACG for Business. Check them out. Visit acloudguru.com to learn more. Tell them Corey sent you and wait for them to instinctively flinch. That's acloudguru.com. Everything you need to know about Route 53 Resolver Query Logging. I've long been a fan of Amazon's premier database, Route 53, but its analytics have had something of a flaw. You've been able to see query logs for hosted zones for a while, but what about what happens when you access other DNS databases that you don't host? Today, Amazon has released a new query logging functionality that helps you understand your access patterns in a far better way than you used to be able to. More prosaically, they let you meet a whole raft of compliance requirements should you lack imagination and use the service as a mere DNS service instead of a database. Simply put, when enabled for a VPC, you'll be able to see which resources inside of that VPC have made DNS queries, as well as what the results were. If you're enabling this for compliance purposes, maybe to see if anything is suddenly compromised and talking to things it shouldn't be, you're going to want to block outbound access to the greater internet for both TCP and UDP ports 53 from the VPCs or subnets you wish to log queries for. Otherwise, there's a gaping hole for non-log queries to pass through, but that's a bit of an other consideration. Let's dive into the mechanics of how this new feature works. If you pull up your Route 53 console that has recently been redesigned with interesting results, in the left-hand menu bar, you'll find a new option hanging out labeled Query Logging. Note that if you haven't set up Route 53 Resolver, it's going to instead display a first-time wizard when you pull up the console that implies you're going to need a pair of endpoints to enable that resolver. That's wrong. It's incorrect. Those things do cost money per hour, and query logging does not. It can be enabled for no additional fees other than whatever you're storing your logs in is going to charge you for ingest. From there, you're going to be prompted to configure query logging, as you've presumably been running your database blind until you've hit this point. When you click the glowing orange AWS button of doom labeled Configure Query Logging, you're first prompted to give it a friendly name. We also learned that friendly names apparently have no whitespace, special characters, nor may they exceed a particular length, which means that different people interpret friendship very differently than I do. Next, you're given three choices as to where you want those logs to live, with a variety of trade-offs that aren't really presented super well. So let's address each of these options one by one. The first option is CloudWatch Logs. If you're going to use CloudWatch Logs, you'll be charged the princely sum of 50 cents per gigabyte ingested. Then a much more reasonable 3 cents per gigabyte month that the data is stored. Note that there's no great way using this option to record those logs in a different account. That alone may mean that this option isn't on the table for some organizations. I really wish that AWS would understand that these services do need to speak cross-account. Our second option is our old friend, an S3 bucket, AWS's combination secure data storage / static website / perpetual data breach root cause service. Easily configured cross-account, this queues any logging until either 5 minutes have passed since the first log item, or it collects 75 megabytes of data, whichever comes first. This keeps it from killing you with a whole bunch of request charges against S3 every time something speaks to DNS. Then it writes that data to your target bucket. This pause may or may not work for your various use cases, so you should be aware that that lag thing exists. In what you might be forgiven for mistaking for a blast from the past, today I want to talk about New Relic. They seem to be a relatively legacy monitoring company, and I would have agreed with that assessment up until relatively recently. But they did something a little out there. They reworked everything. They went open source, they made it so you can monitor your whole stack in one place, and most notably from my perspective, they simplified their pricing into something that is much more affordable for almost everyone. There's even a free tier with one user and 100 gigs per month, totally free. Check it out at newrelic.com. The third and most flexible option is via Amazon Kinesis Data Firehose, which is indeed some words that go together. If you're looking to have a cross-account story or else integrate this into a pre-existing log analysis system, this is probably one of your better options. It's not going to be super expensive, but the pricing here is highly variable and more than a little murky. In the usual US regions that have the best pricing options, that pricing is 2.9 cents per gigabyte ingested, an additional 1.8 cents per gigabyte converted via Kinesis's basic ETL capabilities, which basically means it can output to either Parquet or ORC format, and then another 1 cent per gigabyte if you're delivering it cross AZ or cross VPC. And then, of course, whatever the destination system, be that Elk, Splunk, or some monstrosity you've decided to EC2 to yourself together, charges you for its own ingestion storage. So the answer is no one knows, but it's going to add up to be something presumably far less than the 50 cents per gigabyte that CloudWatch Logs is going to charge you. When you've finished setting all of that up, then you get to assign the query logging configuration to one or more VPCs. This should be fairly straightforward and require not much in the way of context. If you don't see the VPC you're expecting to see, great. You're either in the wrong account or the wrong region. So go back and start over at the very beginning and do everything I just said again. Once you apply that configuration, you'll start to see logging show up, both for what was queried as well as for what results were returned. Now, I want to highlight a few things that it is logging for you. First, it's going to include the source account ID, the region, and the VPC, which is going to be super handy for localizing logs and figuring out where it came from. But from my perspective, what's really useful is that there's a source IP address as well as the source ID, because combined with other logging analytics tools, this can help isolate query logs to specific instances, and specifically ephemeral instances that may very well no longer exist by the time you're looking at the logs. Secondly, this is not merely bound to EC2 instances. Fargate containers and Lambda functions inside of this VPC would also be logged, as would RDS instances that for some godforsaken reason were configured to resolve and then establish outbound connections. Note, this is actually possible to do, but it's almost universally condemned. You don't want your database making arbitrary connections to the internet. I can't believe I have to say that in 2020. Okay, so that's how you configure Route 53 query logging, but why would someone want to do it? What do they care about? There are two use cases that are relevant, and I'm not talking about using this as a database. The first and less exciting is going to be for troubleshooting strange behaviors. If you're seeing strange operational issues, particularly with ephemeral resources, and God help you if those issues are intermittent, then being able to see what's being asked and what's being answered at a DNS level is extremely helpful. The second, which is probably more interesting to most folks, is, of course, security. Better known as that thing that you would test is your company's number one priority right after your data breach has demonstrated very publicly that it is, in fact, an afterthought. I've mentioned how I abuse DNS as a database, but other folks misuse it, for example, as a means of data exfiltration. Akamai had a whole paper on how you can use DNS queries to exfiltrate data from an environment. Without seeing what queries your systems are making and the answer they're getting back, it's very hard to detect this method of abuse. Fortunately, compared to normal traffic on a constrained application, this type of DNS query traffic tends to stick out rather significantly. In some shops, the lack of query logs has been a blocker to adopting Route 53 Resolver. Without a viable and robust query logging capability, the strength of that compliance attestation rests on companies disabling Route 53's resolution capability entirely and instead running their own, a situation that nobody wants. And lastly, from my perspective, it's great to be able to see exactly what my database queries look like. Now, all I needed to do is give me far more granular timestamp data so I can start doing database query latency analysis in my spare time.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.